Hey, everybody, I'm Nick Layton.
And I'm Leah Bonema.
And we're the hosts of Were You Raised by Wolves?
Each week, we try to make the world a kinder, nicer place.
Well, that's the idea, at least.
I mean, we try.
Have you ever wondered what to do if you're ghosted?
Or what to do when a friend asks you to borrow money?
Or the proper way to eat Cheetos?
You know, the big questions.
So please find Were You Raised by Wolves wherever you listen.
This program is brought to you by Chefs Collaborative, a nonprofit with a mission to inspire, educate, and celebrate chefs and food professionals building a better food system. Change menus, change lives. Learn more at chefscollaborative.org.
You're listening to Heritage Radio Network. We're a member-supported food radio network broadcasting over 35 weekly shows live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. Join our hosts as they lead you through the world of craft brewing, behind the scenes of the restaurant industry, inside the battle over school food, and beyond. Find us at heritageradionetwork.org.
Welcome to Feast Your Ears. I'm Harry Rosenblum from the Brooklyn Kitchen. Join me every Wednesday as I talk with people about what they do and how it influences their personal food stories. This is a show about people, life, and food. Today is episode number 76 of Feast Your Ears, and I'm very pleased to have Stacey Ornstein join me in the studio.
Thank you.
Stacey is the founder of Allergic to Salad.
Yes.
And we're going to talk about her programming there, how she started Allergic to Salad, whether or not she's allergic to salad. So thanks, Stacey, for coming in.
Thank you for having me.
As a note, when I was doing some research about Allergic to Salad, when you Google search Allergic to Salad, there are a couple of studies that come up. Not your top. Your SEO is good. You're way up there at the top. But further down on the first page and on the second page of Google, there are some studies about people with lettuce allergies.
Yeah, I believe that you can be allergic to anything.
Yeah. So tell me about Allergic to Salad, your company.
So Allergic to Salad is a youth-based culinary program. We offer in-school and after-school programming to mostly New York City public schools, though we've sort of expanded into the tri-state area, and I sort of have dreams to go national, hopefully soon. We do healthy vegetarian cooking classes. So the name is a little bit of a joke and a play.
Sure.
Of what kids say whenever they see a pile of greens in
yeah.
front of them.
Definitely. I mean, I'm a father of two children, a 7-year-old and a 3-year-old. And definitely, I feel like there's a certain point, and I don't remember what age it was, when my daughter understood the idea of an allergy.
Right. Yes.
And, you know, she never said it herself about being allergic to food in that way, but my son is in fact allergic to peanuts.
Right.
So we talk about food allergies, and you know, her nose will be running, and she's like, "Oh, Dad, I'm allergic to all pollen.
Right.
I'm allergic to this. I'm allergic to that."
I mean, I think it's a really difficult distinction for kids, right? It sort of is like within that capacity of it's like, well, what does time mean,
mm-hmm.
right? My oldest just had his fourth birthday, and he woke up the day after his birthday party, and we were like, oh, we're going to go out to Long Island to have, you know, Nana and Poppy's birthday party now for you. And he was like, am I 5?
Oh, wow.
We're like, no, you didn't,
right.
you know, you didn't turn 5 overnight, like slow down. But it's sort of similar to that, right? You start talking about allergies and how you need to be careful with them and that people can't eat them. And it's like, oh, okay, people can't eat things that we're allergic to. So I'm just going to use this whenever I'm afraid of something or
sure.
when I don't want to eat it.
Yeah.
So now I'm just allergic to it.
And I find definitely with kids, and I don't have memory of this myself as a child, but that the reaction is almost universally, and I don't know why, I don't like that.
Right.
When it's something new.
Right.
Rather than let me find out whether or not I like this.
Right.
And then make a decision.
Well, it's like that.
Understand.
I'm unfamiliar with this.
Yeah.
I'm a little bit nervous about trying this because what if I don't like it? Well, it's okay
yeah.
if you don't like it.
Right.
But I find even adults use it at restaurants. I've
sure.
heard, I've gone into restaurants and I've definitely overheard adults that I know have no allergies will
yeah.
say something like, oh, well, I'm allergic to this just because they don't want to make sure, you know, oh, I'm allergic to anchovies.
Right.
Don't put any anchovies. And it's like, well, you know, you're not allergic to it. Don't,
yeah.
you know,
you're an adult.
Like,
You can say you don't like it. I mean, you can have dessert first. That was my mom's big thing. She always said whenever we asked for like candy and sweets, she said, when you're an adult, you can have dessert first.
I actually ate out with someone once who did that, who we were out and they ordered their dessert. Well, they ordered their whole meal and they said, but can you bring the dessert first? I want to make sure I save room for it. And I was like, wow, I've never actually heard, you know, I've always heard people say save room for dessert, but never actually order
it first. So you make sure you have room for it. I like that. Did you go through different names or did like Allergic to Salad just come to you when you were starting the company?
The name is totally not from me. It's one of my students actually. And this was maybe, what was this, like 8 years ago during the whole like H1N1 swine flu thing that was going around. And this really precocious, girl came into, you know, and I had known her already for a couple months. She'd been in our classes and, she was very vocal about what she did and did not like. And she saw this big pile of spinach on the tray because we were making spanakopita. And so, you know, spinach shrinks down to nothing. And so you see, I mean, it was literally like the table was covered.
Right.
And she saw it and she sort of, she fell down, initially she fell down on the floor and sort of pretended to seizure.
How old was she?
She's second grade. So
my daughter, it's like, grade now. I can imagine.
Right. Yeah. 10 sort of. And so she started to seizure and I was sort of like, what's going on? I could tell she was obviously joking. I was like, what's going on? What are you doing? She goes, I have that H1N1 thing. I can't eat this. And I was like, well, first of all, like you would not be in school if you had H1N1. And H1N1 doesn't prevent you actually from eating anything. And she sort of stood up and she was like, well, fine, I'm allergic to salad. I can't eat this. And so my joke with her was, well, it's really unfortunate because we're going to be having chocolate salad next week.
Right.
And she won't be able to eat that either. Obviously it's, I think sort of the initial reaction is when people say, would you like a salad with that? Or it's a salad, you think, oh, like wilty iceberg lettuce and, you know, sad out of season tomatoes and rubbery carrots. Yeah. Gross. But there's like seaweed salad and shrimp salad and fruit salad and pasta salads and quinoa salad. You know, there's a whole world of salads. And I think even now more and more people are getting so innovative with things that are salads that would potentially, I don't know, maybe have been called a side in the past.
Sure. I mean, there's a lot. I mean, there's even, I used to work in television, and so craft services always, after lunch, would put out a bowl of what we called candy salad.
Right.
Yeah. I mean, it was a bowl of mixed candy, and so it was I'm going to go and get a cup of coffee and some candy salad. Right.
I like that. So it was sort of, you know, she said that, and I just thought it was so funny. But, you know, when I told her we were having chocolate salad, she sort of jumped up and she was like, I'm not allergic to salad. I'm just whatever that is. I can't have it. But of course, it's like the students that always say that the moment they open their mouth in the classroom, I'm like, you really shouldn't have said anything because you are my pet project now.
Right.
And I will get you to eat this.
Yeah.
And those are the kids that always turn out, obviously, like loving, you know, ironically loving the dish and asking for seconds and thirds. Yeah.
So I have to ask something that I've seen a lot of as a parent, and you know, I feel like it gets trotted out every couple of months. You see an article about, you know, how to sneak healthy things or sneak vegetables into kids' food. Are you a proponent of that?
I'm really not. I think for one,
you could tell that was kind of a leading question, right?
I mean, I think for one, it you just don't. You're not allowing a person to develop an actual appreciation for what that is. You're telling them, in order for you to eat spinach, it needs to be inside a brownie. Or in order for you to have, you know, carrots, it has to be inside a muffin.
Or you're not even telling them.
Or you're not even telling them.
Or it's, you know, the recipes that I've seen. I mean, nobody ever is like, well, we're going to sneak ground beef into the brownie.
Right.
To get you to have more protein.
Right.
It's always, how do you get spinach into it? Or how do you get them to eat, you know, carrots?
Yeah, exactly. And I think, you know, and what I say to people, and I work with parents also who have young 6-month-olds and how to sort of develop healthy eating habits starting right from the beginning. And I say to them, you know, it's fine if you want to make like a zucchini bread or a carrot muffin or, you know, substitute some of the butter with applesauce, but be honest about it. Don't call it, you know, like a chocolate muffin when it's filled with spinach or when it's filled with whatever it is. Someone on one of these like parent boards, I saw this discussion. I thought it was so disgusting, and I always mention it. But she had, you know, a very picky eater, and her child wasn't eating any vegetables, and so he only ate peanut butter and jelly sandwich all day every day, she said. And so she wrote on the board, haha, like, I've got him. I took a bag of frozen peas and carrots. I pureed them and I folded them into the peanut butter and I made a peanut butter, pea carrot and jelly sandwich. And he didn't know. And my first reaction was, I never want to eat at your house.
Yeah.
Ever. Ever. because if I'm going to have a peanut butter and jelly sandwich, I want a peanut butter and jelly sandwich. Yeah. And your kid's going to go next door to, like, little Jimmy's house and have a peanut butter and jelly sandwich or a brownie and be like, why does little Jimmy's, you know, peanut butter and jelly sandwich or brownie taste so much better?
Right.
But you also get into getting back to allergies. You also get into trouble when you have someone that has an allergy. Like, as we said before, you can be allergic to lettuce or to spinach.
Yep.
And little Jimmy might not, you know, might see a brownie and say, ooh, brownie. There's no spinach in brownies. I'm going to have one of those. And, you know, an allergic reaction. Yeah. And he's like traumatized for life because he never wants to eat another brownie because you put spinach in it.
Right. I mean, my son is 3 and a half and knows that he's allergic to nuts.
Right.
He knows what nuts look like, but he doesn't know how to know if there are nuts in something.
Right. Right?
So, I mean, just this morning before coming to the show, I was at a school picnic, end of the year picnic for his preschool, and the teachers were very adamant, you know, make sure there's no nuts. And then there was chocolate on the table that had almonds in it.
Right.
And I mentioned it to him that he shouldn't eat it, and he knew not to eat it. But there were brownies, there were cookies, there were all these things,
right?
And hopefully everybody else didn't put nuts in, and he was fine. He did not have an allergic reaction, but it's very hard to know.
Yeah, or used peanut oil.
Yep.
You know, or yeah, I'm very lucky in that neither of my boys have allergies that I know of right now. But I mean, it's very terrifying, I think.
Yeah, it is.
And when people don't take it seriously, not that that parent who brought that didn't take it seriously. They just didn't even...
No, it didn't cross their mind because their kid isn't allergic, which is fine.
Right.
But it is in at that age, it is an issue. And it will be an issue he'll have for his whole life.
Right.
I mean, I have
but as he gets older, he'll be able to actually, you know, identify something and read a label. And,
yep, absolutely. Yeah. So you don't believe in hiding foods from kids.
No.
I'm interested to understand, and tactic is the wrong word, but how do you approach food with children who are put off by it in that way? I mean, I'm very lucky to have kids who, you know, yes, they say, no, I don't want that. But we have the same rule in our house that you list on your site, which is rule number one is try everything. Mm-hmm. And rule number two is you don't have to like it.
Right.
And so we're very clear that, like, you have to taste it. And they're usually pretty good about it. And sometimes they say yuck, and sometimes they say yum, and sometimes they say yuck. And then 5 minutes later, they clean their plate.
Right.
And they said yuck too, because they're just kind of fucking with you. But,
right.
You know, so how do you get a kid who comes into the room and says, ugh, I don't like spinach, to eat spinach, and or to at least try it?
Yeah. I mean, I think, for one, I think most important for kids, especially ones that are adverse to trying new things, especially green things or whatever it is to get them cooking. That's number one. Because even if they don't eat the final dish, 9 times out of 10, they're going to be sneaking things throughout. Which is always so funny to me because I'll sometimes cook with kids and they've literally tried every single component that's going into the dish. And then once it's actually composed and on the table, it's gross. Like, I'm not going to eat this. And it's like, wait, but you literally ate everything and enjoyed everything.
And made it all, right?
And made it all.
And I find that with my daughter, we've started having her choose at least one recipe a week.
Right.
That we're going to make for dinner
one
night. And while she doesn't always eat the final product, the experience of doing it, she always tries it.
Yes, definitely. And I think coming to the... And also, same goes with gardening or anything like that. I bought my son a basil plant, and it's like his basil plant to take care of that's in the window. And I've literally walked by, you know, the kitchen, and I've seen him standing there, like, stuffing his mouth with the leaves. But, you know, it's like you throw basil in something. He's like, oh, I don't eat that.
Right.
it's like, okay, sure. But yeah, I mean, I think also it's really important to stay positive around the dinner table or the breakfast table, whatever table it is, and to not turn food into a battle because, I mean, it's like kids will make a, you know, the moment you say like you have to eat it, like if you don't, you know, you're not going to watch, you know, whatever psycho show I hate you watching because it drives me nuts.
Like all of them.
Yeah. You know, the moment you start taking away those privileges, it's like, oh, well, like who's going to win this battle? You know, it's like the same thing with like bedtime and getting dressed in the morning. And no, I don't want you to wear like your wool pants and long sleeve t-shirt when it's 95 degrees out.
Because, but it's great that you got dressed on your own.
Right. So yeah. Great. You do you and yeah. Have fun with that at school. Like here's a change of clothes that don't worry. You don't have to put it on. Just, yeah. You know, just carry it around all day. Or more like I'll carry it around all day for the time that you tell me that you're, you know, sweating and can't stand it anymore. But I think it's really important to stay positive around the table. And even if you have, there are some kids who are just extremely you know, will fight, you know, it's I think you and I are both lucky that we actually have kids that you'll say like, well, you just have to try one bite, but there are some kids who will just immediately turn it into a battle, and I think that's when you have to like step back and it's like, all right, great, fine, you know, don't eat it, you do you, that sounds great. And then I'm usually saying, it's like, well, do you want dessert? And dessert in our house is like a bowl of strawberries. Yeah. Or like an apple. So I'm like, great. So like, do you want dessert then? If you don't want to eat this, you can have dessert and, you know, tough cookies if you're hungry at, you know, bedtime. And, yeah. You know, and I say, it's like, well, what should you have done? Oh, I should have had dinner. Yeah. Yeah, should have had dinner.
Yeah.
Maybe tomorrow you'll eat it. Mine also, strangely, will always, he's like, is there, he'll have like one bite and he's like, it's okay. Is there school tomorrow? I'll take it to school. Which I'm like, are you going to eat it at school? Like, I'm happy to pack it up for you, but are you going to eat it at school? I don't know, but sure.
My mom used to tell a story that when she was a kid, her mother sent her a salmon salad sandwich to school one day and she didn't eat it. And the next day, her mom sent the same sandwich, and like this went on for like 5 days.
Oh, it's like the aunt that gives you the ugly sweater.
And my mom refused to eat it, and you know, by the end of the week, my mom was so, I mean, I think she was like 11 or 12 years old at the time, and you know, was so overcome, like, oh, this is so gross, mom. You gave me the same sandwich.
Why do you keep giving me the stinky lunch?
And it only came out years and years later that my grandmother had in fact made a new salmon salad sandwich every day.
Oh, no.
But kept sending her with the same thing because she was like, well, you didn't eat it. You have to eat your lunch.
Oh, right. Yeah.
But
yeah. I definitely like have done that with, but mine, I think now just sort of dump it in the garbage. And then he comes back and he's like, I totally ate it all.
Well, my daughter goes to a school where they have lunch at school every mm-hmm. day. So we send her with lunch, but it's sort of a thing of like, what did you like? Cause clearly you didn't eat all your lunch, or what did you eat at school?
Right.
And sometimes that's good. I mean, I think also by the time you get to a certain age, peer pressure really
I was just about to say a lot.
And that can be a very positive influence. It can
yes.
be a negative influence also. You know, we've done a lot of, we've had a number of older school groups, visit through the Brooklyn Kitchen and when the Meat Hook was in our space. And, you know, there was always a moment where the butchers would serve them raw beef and watching high school kids stand there and everybody's like, yeah, yuck, yuck. All it took was one kid
right.
to try it.
The
and everybody
taste
was
maker.
Like, well, yeah, I don't want to miss out. I want to taste it. Right?
Right.
Even if it's gross, they wanted to say that they tried
it.
They
want
to
say even if it's gross, it's better, right? It's like, I mean, I'll get kids who it's like, they see beets and I'm like, this is disgusting. I'm like, did you know that if you eat enough beets, you will pee pink? And if you really eat a lot of beets, like something else is going to turn pink too.
Yeah.
And I'm like, and maybe like you'll be able to stay home from school tomorrow if like, you know, you like show it to your parents and they don't know what's going on. And it's like immediately it's like they're like, you know, eating beets like apples and stuffing their face. Or it's like, oh, did you guys know that it's like asparagus? Your pee will smell so bad if you eat this. Really? Really? So, I mean, it's like, I think the...
It's like science experiment
on yourself. Thing. Exactly. Yeah. And it's like that you factor is totally great for kids. But I agree. It's... that was going to be another thing is, you know, cooking at home, but some kids just, they still don't want to try it. And so I think just getting them involved in cooking classes where you're actually not there, not to like toot my own horn and like what we do. But I mean, I've seen kids who, their parents say, you know, it's great. Like I see them, they're eating seconds and thirds of whatever dish it is in class. They don't touch it at home. but they're eating it at school. And some of it is the peer pressure, and some of it's just, I mean, it's like, I was this way. It's like, oh, it's my parents want me to do something. Like, I'm going to do the exact opposite what they want me to do.
Exactly.
And I'm sure mine are, you know, I've, you know, got two that I'm sure are like that too, or will be. So it's a little bit of that, like, psychological battle.
And it's context, right? I mean, and context influences adult eating habits, too.
Yes.
So I think the thing to remember is that, you know, kids, you know, they're starting to form as people, and it totally, like, what you eat is totally influenced by your context and where you are.
Definitely. And being a great role model yourself, right? I mean, it's like, I'm totally guilty of, like, eating at the table, and it's like, oh, this is, you know, this is the best. It's like you're, like, making out with, like, all the vegetables at, like, on the table when, like, my kid, like, doesn't want to eat it. Or it's like, I can eat, or turning it into competition. Like, I can eat 5 green beans. How many green beans can you eat? And it's like, well, I can eat 6 green beans. It's like, no, I don't believe you. Show me.
Yeah. When my son learned to count, it was a big deal. We were like, can you eat 10?
Right.
Those 11, like, you know, trying to get him to do that.
Exactly. Right. What can you count up to? Yeah, definitely. So, I mean, I think it's most important is just keeping it positive and not, as hard as it is, it's like not letting it totally drive you nuts when they, you know.
Which is really hard, I will say. With our daughter, it is often a battle, more often than I would like it to be.
Right.
But I feel like with her doing some of the cooking, or at least helping in the kitchen, that's changing. We're tipping the scales there, I think.
Yeah.
We're going to take a short break and hear from one of our sponsors here at Heritage Radio. And when we come back, we'll keep talking about salad.
Great.
This program is brought to you by Chefs Collaborative, a national nonprofit network with a mission to inspire, educate, and celebrate chefs and food professionals building a better food system. Chefs Collaborative members work to make sustainable practices second nature for every chef in the United States. Chefs Collaborative was founded in 1993 by visionary chefs including Rick Bayless and Alice Waters, who acknowledge the influential role of food professionals on our food choices, our collective personal health, the vitality of cultures, and the integrity of the global environment. Chefs Collaborative believes that the greater culinary community can be a catalyst for positive change by expanding the market for good food and helping to preserve local farming and fishing communities. Change menus, change lives. Learn more about Chefs Collaborative at chefscollaborative.org.
Hi, I'm Celia Kutcher, host of Animal Instinct on Heritage Radio Network, the show all about animals. Tune in on Mondays at 6 p.m. to hear all about animal education and animal welfare. Support my show and all of Heritage Radio Network's programming by going to heritageradionetwork.org and clicking on the beating heart to donate.
Welcome back to Feast Your Ears. I'm Harry Rosenblum, and in the studio at Heritage Radio behind Roberta's today, I have Stacey Ornstein, the founder of Allergic to Salad. Before the break, we were talking about sort of how to get your kids to eat salad and other things they don't want to try. And, you know, the main message there was stay positive about it. After the break, I try to talk a little bit about something I cooked and ate this week. It's hot in New York this week. We've had like our first real heat wave in the 90s every day for a few days. It kind of broke a little bit this morning with some rain. So salad actually is what I've been making a lot of. And we talked in the beginning about different kinds of salad. And I realized in sort of prepping for this show that, you know, last night on the dinner table, we had chicken salad. We had cucumber salad. We had a watermelon mint feta salad.
Oh, that's one of my favorites.
And so, you know, my daughter said to me last night, she said, "Dad, your chicken salad is amazing." And I looked at her and I said, "Well, it has mayonnaise." Yeah. And she said, "Man, mayonnaise is the best."
I know. Well, especially when you're using like good mayonnaise, yeah. right? Or making your own or something like that. It, mayonnaise is so good. I agree.
So I think salads is really like, that's it. I mean, summer is all about different kinds of salad. You mentioned in your pre-show questionnaire that eggs were the best thing you ate this week. Another thing that can be made into a salad, right?
Yeah. Well, I mean, that questionnaire was, in fairness, taken like 2 weeks ago, but...
Fair enough. Yes, it's true.
But I actually did eat... I did eat an egg this morning. I really like eggs. I think they're so versatile and they're like good on sandwiches or, you know, you can even throw them on like a hamburger or like on top of a salad or in pasta. I like the soft boil because I like the center, like still just like a little gooey.
I agree. My kids don't like the yolk.
Oh, mine don't either.
I don't know why.
I'm
wondering if it might be texture.
This is the best part, you guys.
Yeah. Well, my daughter likes yolk when it's runny. I mean, sometimes she'll ask for in my house, we always call it dipping egg.
Yeah.
So you take, you know, you cut up, you have toast and you get to dip it in the yolk.
Right.
But hard boiled, they don't like the yolk.
Yeah, mine, and I'm always like, snooze, you lose. Like, I'll eat your yolk. Sounds good to me. I know. I'm like, why are you eating egg whites? You're like from the 80s or something. What's wrong with you?
What did you eat growing up? Was salad and greens and vegetables a big part of the cuisine of your household?
I remember starting very young. My mother did have us, you know, I have two brothers and, you know, like family of five, there's like a lot of food, especially with two boys in the house, like a lot of food being consumed a lot. So she definitely cooked a lot. But at a certain point, she started sort of distributing the meal time to each of us. And so each of us sort of had like a day of the week that we would cook. But I remember, I'm sort of slightly OCD and I sort of ended up making the salad a lot. And it was mostly so I could slice the vegetables and arrange them in like a very OCD geometric pattern on top of like the bed of lettuce or whatever it was that we were eating.
I feel like you could do a collaboration. Do you know Julia Sherman, who just wrote Salad for President?
Oh, I saw that. Yeah, I saw that.
Yeah, she was just on a show yesterday, I think, in the studio here. So you guys could collaborate maybe since she's an artist.
Yeah, I mean, I love that. Yeah. I mean, I don't really have like the same kinds of salads I did as a kid as much anymore because they were sort of like that 1980s like iceberg lettuce and carrots and tomatoes. But yeah, I mean, I loved like arranging the things into.
I grew up sort of creating this theory that I always liked Brussels sprouts and lima beans, and everybody talked about how they didn't like them. And I remember when I went to college, I had a roommate that just ate peanut butter and jelly
right.
kind of all the time. But I remember going and we joined a co-op and had a farm share. My junior and senior year in college, and we got Brussels sprouts on the stalk. And one of my roommates was like, "What is that?" And I was like, "Oh, it's Brussels sprouts. They're delicious." They're like, "Ugh, yuck!"
Right?
I hate Brussels sprouts. And I looked at them and I said, "Do you
know
what they taste like?" Because I feel like at least in the 80s, there was a social, it was almost like a, I guess what we would now is like a proto meme about like not that lima beans were gross and that Brussels sprouts were gross, and I never understood it because I always liked them, and I remember cooking them for my roommates, and I was like, just taste them.
Yeah.
And they were like, man, this is delicious. And I was like, right. You were convinced by social pressures
right.
that these foods were foods kids don't like.
I think there was also, like, a wave of overcooked, soggy greens.
That's a fair point, yeah.
Right? And it's, like, I'm very much like an al dente, like, broil them, keep them a little bit crispy, or, like, hot sear them so they're like a little bit blackened sort of thing going on. And I can pretty much eat like any green you put in front of me in that method. But yeah, I mean, my husband talks about how it's like, oh, like I couldn't eat like broccoli until I was in my 20s because it was like always like
limp
boiled.
And
yeah. So it's like, well, like roasted broccoli though with like garlic and like a little like salt and pepper or parmesan or whatever is awesome.
Yeah.
So I think that has, and so that's what I often say to people whenever they, kids especially, right, in our cooking classrooms, they'll like look at a tomato and they're like, oh, gross, I don't like tomatoes. And I'm like, well, do you like pizza sauce? And it's like, oh, yeah, I like pizza sauce. Do you like salsa? Yeah, I like salsa. Do you like...
ketchup?
Yeah, do you like ketchup? I love ketchup. So I say to them, I'm like, you know, all of these things, like the primary ingredient is a tomato. So, like, you like tomatoes, you just might like it in some other form,
or
which is okay.
You've
so
you possibly had it in a form that wasn't good or that you didn't like.
Right. Right?
I mean, that's, I think, the other thing, too, is kids, I think, are very literal.
Yes.
And so, like, one experience is
right,
very
is forever.
Yeah.
And also, like, texture, too, right? I mean, it's like, I still, unless it's, like, an amazing, like, ripe, farm-fresh tomato, like, a plate of tomatoes, like, if it's off-season and it's, I'm like, I can't do it.
Yeah.
Like, sliced tomatoes, like, why would I order Caprese salad in the middle of winter?
Right.
Like, it comes out and it's, like, it's like...
mealy and, yeah.
Yeah, it's disgusting.
Yeah.
Or it's, like, sliced on a sandwich. It's, like, yeah. So, yeah, I mean, I think, and so texture, even... you know, for adults, I think that's a big component.
Yeah. You do classes even for very, very young kids or for parents who are
yeah.
feeding very young infants who are just starting to eat. And I wanted to ask a little bit about that and what kind of things new parents, I've obviously missed my chance. My kid's early palate is already formed. But I think that, you know, it has always been interesting to me. I mean, when we started feeding our children, we were just feeding them whatever we were eating.
Right.
And, you know, whatever that was, but the sort of, you know, the pressures from the baby food industry, from our parents who had sort of grown up feeding us in this way, was to feed kids only mush that had
right.
no texture, that had almost no flavor.
Right.
You know, and sometimes it did. It was bananas or it was sweet potatoes and things like that. But often it's like, you know, cream of wheat is touted as like the perfect baby food, and it's
yeah.
the most boring thing to eat in the world. And sure, it's calories.
Right.
But it's not...
helps them sleep through the night. the golden ticket that every parent wants.
I thought that was whiskey.
Both.
Oh, that
you
helps
add a little shot
night.
Of whiskey into the cream of wheat. Yeah, I mean, our in-school classes, our cooking classes start, we actually do pre-K, so as early as like 18 months is what we do in school programs. But what sort of happened was when my oldest was... about like 8 months, eight to 10 months old or something. And we would take him out to restaurants and people were like, wait, you're just giving him, it's like what you say, you're just like giving him what you're eating. Like, where's the jars of food? And like sitters would come over and be like, well, I don't understand. What am I supposed to feed him?
You know,
it's
like
food. Where, and I'm like, I don't know. There's like some like sliced cucumbers in there. And like, you know, there's like a chicken, you know, a drumstick in there with like no meat on it left. Like he can sort of gnaw on that, whatever. But yeah, sort of, I had, a friend of mine that, is also a food educator and, shortly, just before my oldest was, sort of about to go down that path of eating solid foods, she came over and, you know, I was like, I had like my like super special blender and like my 1 ounce like freezer things. And I was like, I'm totally going to make all my own food. You know, like little did I know it's like how exhausted I was. And I was like back at, you know, running allergic to salad and it was just like not going to be possible. And she was sort of like, what are you doing? Like baby led weaning. And then she like got up and like washed dishes and left. And I was sort of like, what are you talking about? What's going on? And I took the book out of the library and I read it. And, I really latched onto the idea because it's like, well, if you really think about it, freezers and blenders and pasteurization, these are all very new inventions. And it's like, well, but humans are still alive.
Yeah, we're here, right? I
before
mean, we're
that.
The example of how that worked
exactly.
out.
And I mean, my grandmother like grew up on a farm. My mom grew up on a farm. It's like she wasn't, you know, like running off to the grocery store and buying like little like jars of food. So it's like, well, what did people do? How are people alive? But yeah, it's exactly what you say. It's, you know, giving the child when they're showing signs of readiness and, you know, it's not always exactly at 6 months. For some kids, it's 5 months or 4.5 months. And for some kids, it's 8 months. But giving them real food, exactly, you know, what you're eating and, you know, it's cutting it correctly so it doesn't become a choking hazard, obviously, but But offering that to them, and people always say, it's like, oh, well, like, but like, can I give them food like with cinnamon and cumin? It's like, well, yeah, why not?
Yeah.
And in fact, like the people, and so I hold these workshops and I sort of lead parents through this process. And I sort of say, it's like, you know, I'm sort of think of me as like a food, like mentor or something through this. And, you know,
I will give a word of warning. An experience we had with my daughter, the first food she ever ate, I think, was actually sweet potatoes at Thanksgiving when she was like 4 months old.
Yeah.
And then the first food she really showed a real affinity for was bananas.
Mm.
And we made the mistake of giving her like 2 whole bananas.
Oh, yeah.
When she was like 6 months old, like right in a row, because she's like, wanted another one. I was like, great, you want right. to eat another banana?
Totally.
And she was constipated and didn't poop for like 3 days.
Right.
And
well, and like, this is like the thing that we don't even think about is like a lot of these things that people are like, it's a great first food. Sweet potatoes, carrots, bananas are actually very constipating foods.
Yep.
And it's like, if you think about it, it's like when you're sick, it's like people are like, eat these foods because it'll like, you know, seal you up.
Yep.
And already it's like when a child goes from having like a purely liquid diet to like a more solid diet, like that's a huge
change
in their system. So it's all these things going on.
Our daughter also, I mean, one of the things she prides herself on liking to eat bugs. Mm. She loves eating crickets and chapulines and fried worms and stuff. But when she was a baby, I mean, when she was a year and a half, maybe, I guess maybe she was even younger than that, I think. We had a bug dinner where we had a chef come in and who was cooking bugs.
Nice.
And I was holding my daughter in one hand and I was holding this live mealworm in the other hand. And it's moving around like a worm. And she couldn't even speak. She just leaned over with her mouth open.
I love
like
that.
Like had some crazy innate understanding that it was edible. And that it was food, and we've never been able to figure out, but she likes eating bugs.
That's so funny. I love that.
Yeah.
And that's something that you would have, like, if you were doing purees with her, you would have never, you know, would have been like, what is it, you know, what's happening? I mean, at 1.5, they're, like, past that point by then. But yeah, I have a lot of parents who it's like, oh, my, you know, it's like I used to bring food samples, and I would bring basically a cucumber salad with, like, you know, apple cider vinegar and black pepper and... People will be like, my kid can't eat that. And it's like, well, why? Why can't they eat that? And then it's like, well, they don't eat cucumber. And I was like, well, you say they don't eat cucumber, but like, give this to them. And they would. And they're like, my kid never eats cucumber. And they're like licking this thing like it's the best thing in the world. And it's like, yeah, because it's got flavor on it.
Yeah.
But, you know, and I mean, obviously, like within that, you know, people are like, well, but like, what if they're allergic? And, you know, what I say, it's like, if you actually take a step back and sort of think about like what you are cooking at home, it's like you're really cooking like the same like 10 if that like 10 things just like on rotation slightly differently every time. And so, you know, cook what you want to cook, and you know, and then if there is a reaction, you can take a step back and it's like, well, what was new that was offered at that point? But also I think we were talking during the break too about, you know, like kids' menus and ages of this, and I'm so against kids' menus in terms of like the whole like chicken nuggets, pizza, mac and cheese thing. It's if a kid's menu is like half size entrees, I'm pro. That sounds great. But when it's like the same 4 bland brown things, it's just like, you know, it's what age does that stop at?
For some people, it doesn't.
And it's like, well, if you've been eating this bland food your whole life, like, how are you going to make that transition once your taste buds have developed? I once read somewhere that all of your taste buds are formed by the time you're 12 months old. And that those are basically all of your taste memories for life. So a lot of people say, it's like, well, my kid is like so stubborn. It's like, well, but did they have it like early and they'll have that taste memory, and they might just be in a stubborn phase right now. And that stubborn phase could last like 5 years if you have a really stubborn kid. But they've got positive taste memory from that, from like being super young, and they'll eventually come back to it. You know, like riding a bicycle.
So we're just about out of time here, but people can find out more about Allergic to Salad at allergictosalad.com.
yep.
So if someone was interested, you do classes in schools where you go into a school class, mm-hmm. and teach regular classes, but you also do classes in a space where people can come to you.
Yeah, after schools, spaces where You know, right now we're on just in a story on the Upper East Side at a couple locations. We also do restaurant partnerships. And so that's actually one of the biggest things. We do affordable classes at restaurants. So we usually partner with restaurants around the city. We just did one with Bear Burger in Astoria. We did one with Marlowe and Sons. We did one with Diner, where we partner with the chefs and they cook a meal with the or a dish with the kids. And It's featured on the menu for a week, and then proceeds come back to help us purchase equipment for our public school classes. So, sort of the best way is to jump on to our website, jump on to our Facebook page. We're also doing a camp for the first time that we're really excited about, sort of a summer experience of going to different factories, like pickle factories and ice cream factories and bakeries, and sort of watching the process of what happens and then sort of bringing it back to our base camp. So that information's on our site too. But I think best way is following along Facebook, Instagram, website, seeing what's happening and getting involved, definitely.
Awesome. Well, thank you so much for taking time today
come
down to the studio. Thanks, everybody, for listening to Feast Your Ears. Big thank you to David Tatasciore for engineering the show. I have to make a shameless plug here for my first book, which comes out August 1st. Vinegar Revival is a guide to making and using vinegar at home. You can pre-order it at vinegarrevival.com or on Amazon or from your local bookstore. Please take a moment to like the show on iTunes if you like it, and please reach out to me if you have any questions. You can reach me via email, harry@thebrooklynkitchen.com, and you can follow me on social media at TheFoodBaller. You can find Feast Your Ears and lots of other great shows at heritageradionetwork.org and on iTunes, Stitcher, or wherever you get your podcasts. Thank you very much. Talk to you next week.
Thanks for listening to Heritage Radio Network, food radio supported by you. For our freshest content and to hear about exclusive events, subscribe to our newsletter. Enter your email at the bottom of our website, heritageradionetwork.org. Connect with us on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter at @heritage_radio. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization driving conversations to make the world a better, fairer, more delicious place. And we couldn't do it without support from listeners like you. Want to be a part of the food world's most innovative community? Rate the shows you like, tell your friends, and please join our community by becoming a member. Just click on the beating heart at the top right of our homepage. Thanks for listening.
Listeners, we want to tell you about a podcast we're really digging. It's called Christopher Kimball's Milk Street Radio. Every week, they travel the world to find the most fascinating stories about food, including children who harvest cod tongues after school in Norway, and a detective who tracks down food thieves. And on Milk Street Radio, you can always find the unexpected. The comedian who ranks apples using an elaborate 100-point system, the secret history of grocery stores, and how to eat your way through Italy. They also interview the most beloved names in food like Jacques Pepin, Sola Aweli, Jose Andres, Jet Tila, Ina Garten, Nigella Lawson, and Padma Lakshmi. Plus, co-hosts Christopher Kimball and Sarah Moulton do live calls with listeners and answer their questions about ingredients, techniques, and culinary mysteries. Like, why roasting a leg of lamb made one caller's oven explode? Ever wonder why your bread won't rise or your souffle falls flat? Chris and Sarah have the answers. You'll also hear from a rotating cast of contributors, including Kenji Lopez-Alt, Cheryl Day, Dan Pashman from The Sporkful, and Alex Inouz, a French guy cooking from YouTube. Take a listen at 177milkstreet.com/radio or just search your podcast app for Milk Street Radio.